This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome back. The current time is 7:16, and you are tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. Hello, Mitch.
Hello, Grant. Welcome back, listeners, to Tech Talk. It has been quite a while since we've been on, and we are happy to be back with you all.
Yeah, it just took some getting the schedules lined back up. Glad you can join me, even though you're not in town today.
Yes, problem that'll be fixed by next week. I'll be in town starting next week, and we'll be back for the rest of the summer.
Great. I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad that we'll be back in town, both of us, actually. So we'll be back in the normal schedule. All right. So, I wanted to give you a second if you wanted to lead in with any exceedingly pressing topics. Otherwise, I've got just a little bit of a queue of stuff from this week.
Go for it.
All right. So the first thing I had up was that Apple services, their web services, have been having some issues this week, particularly over the past 24 hours or so. 13 services have been down today, and 13 of them are down as of an hour ago. So we're talking about a vast array of stuff, from iMessage to iCloud to Mail to FaceTime, and it's an issue originating with the App Store.
Well, that's not good. Apple, your servers are apparently down quite a bit.
Yeah. And so this is the first time that they've had an issue with iMessage since 2013. And, you know, this is only...
That's pretty impressive for a service to have been running in that capacity of that wide usage nonstop, basically, since 2013, for 3 years, you know?
Yeah. And since then, you know, this is only their second glitch in 4 years, so it's really not a terrible track record, but they're having, I mean, widespread issues today. So,
have they announced what it is at all, or...?
I haven't heard back from Apple. They've just said that they're working on it, and that they'll have it up as quickly as they can, but they've yet to actually, and that's also kind of a diagnostic thing. I'm not sure if they even will say until they actually get it fixed. Either way.
Well, I was curious whether or not it happened to be some sort of power issue.
It wasn't that I know of. I don't believe it was a power event.
Well, that's good. It's not a power thing, I guess.
They're saying they're working on it. Right now, as of this moment, they say iCloud, backup, drive, notes, storage, the web apps, iWork, mail drop, photos are down. And there have been outages throughout the afternoon, although it looks like they're getting a good bit of their stuff cleaned up. They've gotten some of their issues resolved, so they're on the upswing now. So I think they'll get it worked out here in the next hour or two. So if you do have issues, it looks like iMessage is back online. It looks like iCloud Mail is back online, and Calendar. So if you're having issues, it seems like they're going away, so stick with us for a little bit, and I'm sure that those problems will get resolved rather timely. Next
up. Alrighty, well, what's up next?
Next up was an article that I found that I thought you'll love this. Uber has launched a limited run of a service called Uber Bike.
And what is that?
So they're testing it out in Amsterdam starting this week. And what it is it's a special Uber service where it's just like ordering a normal car, except this car is guaranteed to have a bike rack.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a really, really inventive idea. So that if you want to get somewhere else quickly, but you want to bring a bicycle with you so that you're a little bit more mobile, I think that's a really clever way to handle that. And I really... Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, look at that. Think the more you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's really clever. And I'm interested in seeing how this goes, and I hope it goes well, because I would love to see this become a more standard feature. They've announced...
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They've announced that they're using Amsterdam, of course, as a test market, because it's estimated that there's almost 1 million bikes there. But they've decided that they want to go after this to encourage bicycling in metro areas. That's nice to see for a lot of reasons, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Very true, especially seeing as biking, with our current CO2 emission issues with global warming and whatnot, biking is becoming a much more popular alternative in cities, mainly because in addition to reducing emissions in high-density areas where you're going to get a lot of emissions, in areas sort of like L.A., just because there's so many cars there, it's a CO2 hotspot. You're also seeing a relief on the traffic buildup because more people are choosing to bike a shorter distance instead of getting in a car and taking up space on the roadway while going a shorter distance. It's actually a twofold there, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a lot of advantages to this, and I think that long-term, if something like this were to be adopted, and I'm always going to be a proponent of bicycling, especially in metro areas, because that drastically reduces traffic and is really exciting.
True, very true. What's up next?
What's up next? I know we don't talk about this much, but Minecraft hit a big milestone this week.
Oh?
Yeah, yeah.
How so?
How so? They topped 100 million sales.
Users? Sales, okay.
Yeah. 100 million users, which is a big deal. That's a lot of copies of a game to be sold, and it puts it squarely among the best selling ever.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I know it's really it's sort of like the digital version of Legos, except there's less pain when you step on it.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. One of the things that I find really interesting here is that when you look at sales, Tetris is the only game ever above that.
Really?
Yeah. The license.
Now, we're not talking about game franchises. We're talking about a single individual game.
A single individual game, a licensed version of Tetris from 2006, is the most sold game of all time, then Minecraft, then Wii Sports.
Wii Sports?
Yeah. When you think about it, it was bundled with every Wii that got sold for the entirety of time that they made Wiis.
But does that count? That's,
yes, yeah.
An avid,
I mean, they sold 82 million copies of it and they got produced and got sent out, so that counts.
I guess. I would assume it was more Wii sales in that count, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
Whichever way you want to measure it, I guess.
I guess. I'm kind of surprised the Pokemon franchise, or any of the Pokemon games, wasn't on that list somewhere. As wide-reaching and popular as that entire franchise is.
Pokemon Red, Blue, and Green, which it treats all as one...
Edition
is, it's not enumerated, but it looks like it's maybe about number 20, number 15 on the list. Let me count.
Really? Huh. Alrighty then.
Yeah, it's number 20, and then number 22 is Gold and Silver. So, consistently coming in at 23 million sales each. That's a lot of distributions, nonetheless. I mean, the fact that every couple of years they're churning out
a new game. I kind of find it interesting. I mean, it's one of the few franchises that's been able to last for 20 years solid.
Yeah.
Talking about merchandise, video games, movies, a TV series. It's just amazing how long running. I mean, trading cards, anything you can imagine that could possibly be done with a franchise. Pokemon has done it well, done it consistently, and has maintained and only expanded their fan base. I've never heard of anyone saying, wow, I really didn't like that Pokemon game. I'm going to hate the whole series from now on.
Yeah.
I mean, people are always willing to give Pokemon a try.
Yeah. It's still... One of the things I find most interesting about this are... The three games really at the top of this list are largely considered three of the most casual games. And I know that a lot of people give casual gaming a lot of flack, but should we really be that hard on it when it is by and large the most profitable category?
Well, it depends on if you restricted it. Because, I mean, the 2006 version of Tetris we were talking about, people actually purchased that through their phones, I would imagine. That's when phone gaming sort of became big.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the Wii Sports, I wouldn't have considered that because I considered, okay, you're getting Wii Sports with the console. You know, you're not just buying the title game you're talking about. You're also getting something else with it. I don't think that bundles like that should be considered. But they didn't consult me when they made this list, and that's their prerogative.
I mean, they've technically sold that many copies. It was part of a bundle, yes, but whatever. I just find this interesting that Minecraft has, over the past year or so, stormed its way up into second all time. And
yeah, I guess it's just because it's a cheap, I mean, it's a relatively cheap game. You can get it for how much on Steam? Is it free?
I don't think it is, but yeah, it's not. Anyways, it's just interesting to me because unlike something like Tetris or Wii Sports, where your intention isn't necessarily to buy that game, so to speak, you know, when you were getting the bundle, you were getting it to get the console. Or when you were getting Tetris, it's because it was already on your phone. You know, mm-hmm. I don't feel like there's a huge amount of people that really, like, sought out Tetris and tried to go buy it. But Minecraft is another thing altogether. It's that 106 million people have sought out and purchased that game. And that's what I find interesting.
It definitely is. So.
I thought you'd find that interesting and very much in up your alley.
I really did. So, it's 7:30 now. Are we going to take a 15-minute music break? Or are we going to continue for another 15 minutes? And then how do you want to handle this
one? Let's go ahead and continue for another 15. And then about 7:45, we'll call it quits for the night. And... Yeah, and then we'll play some music on the way out, and we'll see you next week when we are both in the studio, so that should be fun.
All right, well then, what's up next?
All right, what's up next? Are you familiar with Project Magenta?
No, I'm not, but actually now that you mention a project, I meant to say that I'd seen this last week. I'm going to hijack this couple
go
of minutes.
Go for it.
And remember Project Aura that we've talked about with Google so many times, which is the modular block phone
concept?
Supposedly, it is going to start beta testing that project with consumers sometime over the next year.
Oh, boy.
That's finally happening. And I figured that would be sort of interesting. It was one of our first topics we ever talked about on the show. And it's kind of interesting to see how almost a year and a half later that topic is still relevant and we're still talking about it.
It's exciting that it is still relevant and it's still on our radar because I think that shows the staying power of this idea.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does. I think that someone should be able to customize their phone much in the way they would customize a laptop because you don't really hear many companies doing custom build phones. You can get on like Lenovo's website, for example, and build a custom computer, you know, with all the parts you want specified and battery you want specified.
But even that doesn't quite have the modularity of the idea that I can swap out battery packs on my phone and maybe one day I know I'm going to need it, so I break out the big battery, you know?
Yeah, and it amazes me that no one's thought to do that with a phone, even to the point of what I was talking about with the customizing your laptop where you specify what parts you want used. You know, no one's done that with phones as far as I know. And you know, seeing how personal phones are and how widely used they are, I'm kind of surprised they haven't done that yet. Anyone other than Google's Project Aura, which is exploring the concept, you know?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see where that project goes.
All right. I'm excited to hear where that goes and keep me up to speed. I should learn more about that.
Will do. So you were talking about Project...
Magenta.
Magenta. No, I have not heard of Project Magenta. What is Project Magenta?
This coming from a blog post that Google made this week to start... Magenta is being developed by a small team of researchers from the Google Brain team. If you're a researcher or a coder, you can check out the alpha version code here. Once we have a stable set of tools and models, we'll invite external contributors to check in code. If you're a musician or an artist, we hope you'll try using these tools to make some noise or images or videos, whatever you like. Our goal is to build a community where the right people are there to help you out. If Magenta tools don't work for you, let us know. We encourage you to join the discussion on how Magenta evolves. Magenta is a learning piece of art. That is to say that Magenta is a set of tools that are meant to be intelligent that are also meant to be perhaps creative. And I know that that's a dangerous word, but that's the goal. And so this week, Magenta self-taught itself, and here is a demonstration of its abilities. What you're hearing right now is the entirely self-generated, automatically generated music created by Magenta.
So Magenta is another AI project.
Mm-hmm. Similar to DeepMind, it's meant to be pattern searching, and it generates music, and it tries to make collages to make pieces of art, and it's a very interesting creative endeavor. And it makes a surprisingly catchy piano riff.
I'm not gonna lie, for a second I thought you'd put me on hold.
Yeah. But it's a surprisingly catchy riff.
It is. Where did it receive that pattern? Did someone go in and input bits of a pattern, or did it search the web for audio snippets and put them together? How did it come up with that?
They give it samples of music, and it's... They give it samples of music in a certain format, and it kind of deconstructs it, plays around with it, and it continues to generate new samples and tiny little songs like that. And then people listen to it, and, you know, at the end, it asks you, did you like that? And if you say yes, then it helps it understand what parts of it you liked, and if you say no, it tries to guess at why you didn't like it, and it tries to continue to generate music that people generally find pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's kind of interesting that, of course, Google would be involved in this, mainly because it seems to me that this is all, as you said, pattern recognition and search technology. Which is what Google is. Google is a pattern recognition entity and a search engine. You know, by exploring with these AIs that do automatic searching like that, they can greatly improve the speed of things you're going to search in their search engine. They can make it easier to include more options that are maybe relevant, or even pare down the number of options that they may decide, okay, this might not be entirely relevant to the search. We've determined that, yes, these keywords are in it, but the context that you're looking for doesn't really match this article, so we're going to drop this article. You know, I would be curious to see if this project did work, where they continued to springboard off of it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, because every time we continue to modify the way that we think about, you know, every time we take another endeavor and we go out on a limb trying to do something intelligent, I think it helps us really understand what it means to be intelligent. And this is a great example of something that has, in some sense, succeeded already, even though it's just barely getting started. This Python-friendly program is capable of figuring out how to make music that's pleasant.
I mean, talking about this makes me want to bring up that conversation we had, I guess really our last big AI conversation. I don't think we're going to just all of a sudden one day not have artificial intelligence and then one day, oh, suddenly we have AI. I think your viewpoint, if I recall, was that AI isn't going to happen in one singular point, that there were two ways that artificial intelligence would happen. Either A, it's going to happen at a singular point, one person's going to come up with it, and all our AI technology is going to more or less be a derivative of that. Option two, which was the one that I think you were more in favor of whenever we discussed, if I'm remembering correctly, was that there are going to be a lot of little attempts at AI, like Project Magenta, like the Google AI that was able to beat the Go Master, the Facebook AI, you know, the Twitter artificial intelligence. We're going to have all these little localized, specialized artificial intelligence programs, and eventually someone's going to come together and take all these other derivatives and integrate them into an official artificial intelligence that's based up of multiple routes. And I tend to agree with you on that. I think that's more of what's going to happen.
I think we have this huge mountain of what it means to be intelligent, like a person like you or I. And I think we're going to see that kind of slowly chip. We've already chipped away at a lot of the mountain that's very structural, it's very procedural, if it comes to math, or if it comes to very precise, rigidly defined rules and games. You know, computers are exceptionally good at that, and they're getting better all the time, but the nuance that comes with things like emotion or vision, object orientation, and we're starting to chip away at that mountain. We've made a piece of software that can make pleasant music with no input whatsoever from a human other than, was that pleasant? And that's kind of mind-boggling, and that's really exciting, and I think it is going to be a gradual process. I think we're going to slowly chip away at this whole mountain of what it means to be intelligent, and we're going to understand ourselves better for it.
I wholeheartedly agree.
It's exciting.
So,
I'm
do we have something else coming up in our last couple of minutes, or are we about ready to call it quits if you want to?
At this point, I didn't have anything else. If you had anything that you wanted to bring up, then now would be the time to go for it. But I'm done with my articles. I thought that was a good...
Yeah, it was a good little segment right there, including our little toss-in about Project Aura. So with that, again, we would like to apologize for the past couple of weeks not being on the air regularly whenever you, our listeners, expect us to. But we'll be back next week, and we'll be seeing a much more regular schedule starting next week.
Yeah, we'll be back, and we'll be consistently here all through the rest of the summer. Same time slot as always, 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursdays.
That's right. So thank you for tuning in and checking out with us here on Tech Talk. We'll be back next Thursday, we're after Nathan C., aren't we?
Yeah.
DJ Baby J?
Yep.
All right. And as always, we'll be the 2 hours before the Party Panda Power Hour coming up next from 8 to 10.
That's right.
With me, Spencer Sell.
Should be a good one. As always, Spencer is quite the party animal, so it should be a really...
Party panda.
Yeah. He is quite literally a party animal. How about that?
He comes dressed in a panda suit to do his radio show. That's how dedicated he is to you, his listeners. So, with that, we're going to hop off here and let Grant play you some more music, and we'll see you next week.
Cool. I got some more music coming up for you here in a minute. Thanks for tuning in to WRFL Lexington. You've been listening to Tech Talks here at WRFL, and the next track I got lined up is by Juliana Barwick. Mitch, I'll see you next week. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you next Thursday.
You too, Grant. Catch you later, buddy.
See ya.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm. And, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to wrfl.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.